So historically, building enterprise software has been, well, a lot like constructing a skyscraper.
Oh, definitely.
You need architectural blueprints, you spend months just laying down a concrete foundation.
Right, and you bring in safety inspectors for like every single floor.
Exactly. And you hire this massive crew of highly specialized workers. It is slow, it is deliberate, and it is extremely expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
But imagine if just one morning, someone backed up a flatbed truck, dropped off a stack of prefabricated, fully furnished rooms, and just said, here, just click these together.
I mean, that would completely change the city's skyline practically overnight.
Right.
But if we follow that logic, it would also absolutely terrify the city planners and the safety
Oh,
inspectors
for sure.
because you are completely bypassing all the traditional checks and balances.
Right. And that tension, between incredible speed and terrifying risk. That is exactly what is happening right now in the world of artificial intelligence. So welcome to OpenClaw Daily by Tom Frazier.
Glad to be here.
Today's daily briefing is a deep dive into Tom Frazier's latest breakdown of the fast-moving AI agent ecosystem. And if you are an executive managing a product team right now, or a builder, or, an operator tasked with figuring out your company's AI strategy, this is your blueprint.
It really is required reading at this point,
Yeah.
because what Tom Frazier has mapped out in this brief is that three massive simultaneous waves of software releases have just hit the market.
At the exact same time.
Right. And we are officially shifting AI agents out of the research playground phase and into a production-grade, enterprise-ready reality.
So if you're looking to accelerate your product differentiation, you really have to understand what just happened here. We are going to break down how to tighten your architecture, your finances, and your compliance.
Before you even think about a broader rollout.
Exactly. But before we strategize, we need to know the mechanics of what actually launched.
Yeah.
Let's unpack the first wave.
Well, wave one is all about agent launches. Specifically, we are seeing the release of pre-built agent bundles and off-the-shelf orchestration tools designed for autonomous multi-step workflows.
Because previously, making an AI actually take an action was incredibly tedious.
That was a nightmare. But now these bundles include modular tool connectors that are just ready out of the box.
Wow.
So instead of your engineering team writing custom code to connect your AI to your databases, your external APIs, or your observability hooks, these connections are already built.
Well, hold on. For those of us who aren't deep in the engineering weeds, what exactly is an observability hook in this context?
Oh, sure. Think of it as installing a diagnostic monitor directly into the AI's thought process.
Okay.
Because instead of treating the AI like a black box where you just see the final output, an observability hook lets your engineers see exactly what the model is doing in real time.
Like watching it work.
Right. You see what data it's looking at, how long it's taking to process it, and crucially, where it might be getting stuck. It is absolute magic for debugging.
Got it. So these bundles come with those monitors essentially pre-installed. What else is in the toolkit?
They also include task planners.
And a task planner is what exactly?
It's the engine that allows a model to receive a massive, complex goal from a user, break it down into a logical multi-step process, and then execute those steps in the correct order.
Ah, okay.
And importantly, these bundles provide runtime sandboxes.
Meaning like a secure environment for the agent to play in.
Exactly, but on a highly technical level. A runtime sandbox is a segregated computational environment.
Right, because you don't want it touching everything.
No, absolutely not. If you give an AI the ability to execute code or make external calls, you absolutely do not want it having root access to your core systems.
That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Oh, it is. The sandbox ensures that even if the agent tries to execute a rogue command, like accidentally trying to delete a customer database, yeah, the system physically prevents it because the sandbox restricts its network permissions.
So practically speaking, if you are trying to build an agent for customer triage or research summarization or even complex order orchestration, these bundles drastically shorten your time to production.
Completely.
You aren't building the connective tissue or the security containers from scratch anymore.
Which leads directly to the problem solved by wave two.
Right.
Because if you are building these agents faster and deploying them to end users, you need those users to actually trust them.
Yeah, trust is huge.
So wave two introduces a flood of new software development kits, SDKs, and UI components designed for plain English explainability.
Now, explainability is a huge buzzword right now. What does this actually look like on the screen for the user?
It means automatically generating short, consumer-facing explanations of what a model did and why it did it.
Okay.
These UI components dynamically surface the exact data sources the agent used. They provide provenance links, meaning a user can click a citation and see the source document.
Oh, that's incredibly helpful.
And they include calibrated confidence statements. So the AI might explicitly say, based on these three documents, I am highly confident in this summary.
Okay, so the UI is explaining why a decision was made. But, you know, as an executive, transparency doesn't equal safety.
No, it does not.
Right, like if an autonomous agent is about to accidentally wire $1 million to the wrong vendor, a polite, plain English explanation of why it made that mistake doesn't really help me.
Right. You still lost the $1 million.
Exactly. So where are the actual breaks?
That is exactly the gap that Wave 3 fills. Wave 3 is entirely focused on operational control, delivering robust cost and governance toolkits.
Yeah.
This is where vendors are rolling out per-agent cost dashboards, usage tagging, and policy as code templates.
Let's define policy as code really quickly, because that sounds like a game changer for compliance teams.
It is a massive shift. So historically, a company policy is a written rule book. You tell your human employees, you know, do not access a client's personally identifiable information unless you have explicit authorization.
Right. You have to trust them to follow the rules.
Exactly. With policy as code, you are taking that legal requirement and translating it into hard-coded rules within the software architecture.
Wow.
The AI physically cannot break the rule because the system will block the action before it executes.
So it takes human error out of the compliance equation entirely.
Precisely. And to support that, Wave 3 also introduces strict role-based access controls.
RBAC, right.
Yep, meaning you dictate exactly which agents can access which tools. Plus, it gives you robust, immutable audit logs meant to satisfy both internal teams and external regulators.
I want to synthesize all this because I think looking at it through a corporate analogy really clarifies the shift.
Let's hear.
If we look at Wave 1, the agent bundles, that is like hiring a highly capable new employee and giving them the skills and the authority to act completely autonomously. They can plan their day, access the database, and execute tasks without supervision.
And Wave 2 would be sending that new employee to communication training. You are teaching them to clearly and politely explain their work to your clients, citing their sources so the client feels comfortable.
Right. And Wave 3 is giving your HR and finance departments the necessary dashboards, the hard budgets, and the compliance tracking to ensure this brilliant new employee doesn't accidentally bankrupt the company or break the law.
I love that analogy. When you look at it that way, you can see why having these three toolkits combined completely changes the calculus for enterprise adoption.
Because before this?
Previously, if you wanted to build an agent-style product, connecting all those external tools, ensuring safety, building the traceability, it required massive internal engineering resources.
Just a huge friction point.
A huge friction point. Yeah. These off-the-shelf bundles erase that friction, which unlocks incredibly fast experimentation.
But, and this is the big but, because that barrier to entry is now so low, the risk of scaling bad architecture is just astronomically high.
Oh, it is off the charts.
Right. If you just grab these tools and start building without a plan, things will break.
And in an autonomous system, bad architecture doesn't just result in software bugs. It results in exploding cloud bills.
Yeah. The brief calls out the hidden traps of autonomy, specifically around runaway costs.
Yeah.
Let's make this tangible. What does an exploding cloud bill actually look like in practice?
Let's use a visceral example. Imagine you deploy a financial research agent and it encounters what we call an unbounded retrieval loop.
Okay, an unbounded retrieval loop.
Right. A user asks it to summarize a company's financial history. The agent searches your database, finds a 10,000-page document, and reads it.
Sounds normal so far.
But then it realizes it needs more context. So it searches again, pulls another massive data set, reads that, gets confused, and searches again.
Oh.
If you're paying 5 cents per API call, and this autonomous agent is looping hundreds of times a second trying to achieve perfect information, you are burning thousands of dollars an hour in the background, all before the user even sees a single word of response.
That is absolutely terrifying. Just money down the drain. And the brief mentions two other major culprits: background planning iterations and repeated tool calls.
Yes. So background planning iterations occur when an agent receives a complex prompt and gets stuck in a loop of indecision.
Like overthinking.
Exactly like overthinking. It creates a plan, evaluates it, scraps it, and revises it, burning tokens every single time it thinks.
Wow.
And repeated tool calls are slightly different. That is when an agent is poorly optimized and unnecessarily checks an external API over and over again.
Like what?
Like checking a live stock price 5 times in 10 seconds just to be absolutely sure. You pay for every single ping.
So if a team is deploying these agents right now, what are the immediate technical levers they need to pull to stop the bleeding?
You have to build boundaries at the architectural level. The most immediate fix is enforcing strict per-agent budgets.
How does that work?
You literally configure the API gateway to cut off the agent if it hits a specific token limit or dollar amount in a single session. Just hard stop.
Okay, that makes sense.
Another crucial fix is caching frequently used retrievals.
Okay, explain that one.
Well, if 50 different users ask the agent for the company's Q3 revenue numbers today, the agent should not be running a complex multi-step retrieval loop 50 separate times.
Right.
It should run it once, store the answer in a temporary cache, and just serve that cached version to the next 49 users.
That is so much smarter.
And finally, you implement batching so the agent bundles similar requests together instead of pinging external APIs piecemeal.
You know, I saw a concept in the brief called model splitting as a solution for cost.
Yes.
Is that basically like how a law firm operates?
Yeah.
Like you have the junior staff gather all the files, organize the case law, and do the initial sorting because, well, their time is cheaper.
Right.
Then they hand that perfectly organized packet to the senior partner who writes the final brilliant legal brief.
That is exactly the dynamic you want to replicate in your software architecture. Routing inexpensive routine meta work, like basic data retrieval or deciding which tool to use to smaller, cheaper AI models, is incredibly cost effective.
So you let the cheap models do the grunt work.
Exactly. You reserve your massive, high capacity, expensive frontier models purely for the final complex synthesis. You do not want the senior partner spending 4 hours at the photocopier.
That makes a ton of sense. Okay, so those are the immediate architectural fixes. But once the foundation is stable, how do you manage costs over the long term on the product side?
Well, that requires demand-shaping UX.
Demand-shaping UX.
Yeah, it means designing the user interface in a way that naturally limits expensive behaviors.
Okay, give me an example.
Instead of giving the user an open-ended text box that encourages endless follow-up questions, you offer suggested pre-computed responses they can just click.
Ah, so guiding them to cheaper interactions.
Exactly. You can also implement subscription tiers with soft limits. If a power user hits their limit for the month, the system doesn't shut down, but it gracefully degrades to using a smaller, cheaper model for the rest of their queries.
And teams should be using spot analysis, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Like continually monitoring traffic to find the high-cost, high-frequency queries. If you notice the specific question is burning massive compute power, you pull it out of the AI workflow and rewrite it to be handled deterministically with a standard cheap script.
Exactly. You are constantly pruning the expensive behavior.
So controlling the cloud costs is obviously critical for survival. But even if your costs are perfectly optimized, if the end user doesn't trust the agent's output, or, you know, if a compliance auditor comes knocking and you have no idea why the model made a specific choice, the product still fails.
Which is why governance and user experience are now first order concerns.
They can't just be an afterthought.
They cannot be tacked on right before launch. Let's look at the governance mandates first. If you are deploying an agent today, at a bare minimum, you need a comprehensive model inventory.
Meaning you need a centralized list of exactly which AI models are running, where they are hosted, and what specific tasks they are authorized to perform.
Yes. You also need recorded decision traces.
And what's that?
This is a step-by-step log proving exactly how the agent arrived at its conclusion. We mentioned role-based access controls earlier. That is mandatory for any agent that touches sensitive operations.
Right.
And you absolutely must have documented data lineage. If the AI spits out a fact, you need a permanent record of the external database or document it pulled that fact from.
The brief mentioned that these new software releases include policy as code templates as a starting point. But I imagine you can't just copy-paste a generic compliance policy and call it a day.
Oh, definitely not. It is vital to understand that those templates are only a starting point. They must be strictly adapted to your specific regulatory regime.
Because they're all different.
Completely. The compliance rules for a financial services agent touching customer funds are vastly different from a healthcare agent summarizing medical records or, you know, a retail agent processing returns.
Right. Let's pivot to how all this governance actually impacts the end user, because the brief outlines a massive UX trade-off here.
Yes, it does.
On one hand, explainability lowers the support load and improves error recovery. But there is a trap.
A very significant one. If you expose too much technical detail to a non-technical user, you destroy the user experience.
How so?
If you show them the raw token outputs or the vector search parameters, which is essentially the mathematical gibberish the AI uses to find related concepts, you completely overwhelm them.
Right, they'll just close the app.
Exactly. They will abandon the tool because it feels too complex. But if you swing too far the other way and oversimplify it with a generic message like the AI did magic, trust us, you risk misleading them.
And the moment that agent inevitably makes a mistake,
the user's trust is permanently broken.
So how do teams actually thread that needle in the design?
The recommended solution is layered transparency.
Layered transparency. How does that look in the interface?
Imagine a user asks an agent to reconcile an account. For 90% of your users, the top layer is just a one-line, plain English summary. Something like, I reviewed your last three invoices and applied the standard discount.
Okay, clean and simple.
All right. It is clean. But for power users or users who are skeptical, you provide an expandable UI element, like a little drop-down arrow.
Right.
They click it and they see the provenance. They see the exact PDFs the AI reviewed and the specific company policy it referenced.
And is there a third layer?
Beneath that, hidden entirely from the user interface but fully accessible in the back end, is the machine-readable trace for your internal auditors.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It gives everyone exactly the level of detail they need without cluttering the screen.
That makes total sense. You know, I want to pose a thought experiment here, something The Brief touched on regarding those calibrated confidence statements.
Oh.
Let's say an AI agent gives you a complex answer and explicitly states on the screen, I am 95% confident in this result. As a user, does that actually make you trust it more? Or does it instantly make you look for the 5% error?
It's a fascinating psychological question, really, and the answer varies wildly depending on the context.
Right.
In a low-stakes scenario, seeing a quantified metric feels scientific and reassuring. But in a high-stakes scenario, the moment the software admits a 5% chance of failure, it triggers massive risk aversion.
It's like a GPS. If my navigation app says I am 95% confident this road won't lead off a cliff, I am immediately finding a new route.
Exactly.
This is why teams need to relentlessly test how the phrasing of these statements influences behavior. You can't just slap a percentage on the screen. You have to measure whether certain phrases increase acceptance rates or if they, you know, provoke skepticism and drive up customer support tickets.
Which brings us to the most critical part of this entire briefing, deployment sequencing.
The actual execution.
Yes. Taking everything we've discussed, the new releases, the cost risks, the governance mandates, the UX traps, how do you actually execute this starting Monday morning?
Well, if I am an executive and I see these off-the-shelf bundles, my instinct is to tell my team to buy one, pick a workflow, and just get a pilot live by Friday to see what happens. Is that a recipe for disaster?
Total disaster.
I figured.
Before anyone touches a keyboard, you need to run an impact assessment workshop. That is step one. You have to lock product, engineering, finance, legal, and UX teams in a room together.
Everyone in one room.
Yes. You map out the specific agentized features on your roadmap, and you explicitly define exactly where explainability and governance must attach to those features.
Okay, once everyone is aligned, then you move to the pilot phase.
Yes. Step two. But it must be a guarded pilot.
Guarded pilot?
You pick a non-critical but representative workflow, something that won't ruin the company if it breaks. You deploy the agent using the new bundles, and you heavily instrument it end-to-end, and you time-box this experiment for 4 to 6 weeks.
And the goal here is not to revolutionize the business in a month. It is purely a learning project.
Exactly.
You are gathering hard data on latency, cost, and how those plain English explanations actually function when real users touch them.
Right. And during that pilot, step three is, you must implement your cost control primitives before you even think about a broader rollout.
Right. Get your per agent budgets, your request quotas, and your caching strategies locked in now.
Do not wait for the cloud bill to arrive.
Yeah, that would be a bad day. At the same time, for step four, you are formalizing those governance primitives we talked about. Starting the model inventory, setting the baseline policy as code, and making sure the audit logs are functioning.
And step five, you are coordinating those UX experiments around layered explainability to see what actually builds trust.
But to know if any of this is working, we need metrics. How do you actually define success during this pilot?
You divide your metrics into immediate KPIs and quarterly KPIs.
Okay, what are the immediate ones?
For the immediate pilot, you are tracking the time to completion for the target task. Are we actually faster? You track the user satisfaction, like a net promoter score. You calculate the exact cost per successful task. And you monitor how many governance flags or safety incidents were triggered.
And as we move into a broader rollout, what are the quarterly KPIs?
Over a quarter, you are looking at the broader cost trends per agent. You are tracking provenance completeness. You know, is the system consistently logging where it gets its data?
Right.
And most importantly, you need to monitor the frequency of human overrides.
I would argue that human overrides are the ultimate proxy for AI success.
Absolutely.
Because if your automated system requires a human employee to step in, click approve or fix an error 40% of the time, it's not actually an autonomous agent. It's just a really expensive draft generator.
Precisely. If the override rate isn't dropping, the product is failing.
Now, there's one final rule in this deployment sequence, and the brief defines it as a hard, non-negotiable threshold.
Yes. Teams must have an internal audit trail and a complete model inventory fully functional before an agent hits 1,000 daily active users.
1,000.
Or before it is allowed to touch customer funds or sensitive data in any capacity. Whichever comes first.
Do not cross that line without your safety net fully installed. The risks of regulatory exposure are simply too high.
If we step back and look at the core thesis of this entire briefing, it is clear that these new software releases radically shift the balance toward rapid AI agent adoption.
It's all moving so fast.
The tools are available, the engineering friction is largely gone, but in doing so, they simultaneously raise the bar for operational, financial, and UX discipline.
Right. The barrier to entry has dropped, but the penalty for sloppy execution has skyrocketed.
Exactly. The plain English explainability and the new governance tooling are incredible assets, but they only work if you integrate them deeply into your product design and your financial controls.
So the pragmatic path forward for anyone listening is cautious experimentation. You want to capture the upside, the richer automation, and the fast feature cycles, while aggressively managing the downside.
Right, the surprise cloud spend and the loss of user trust.
Use the new bundles to prove value quickly, instrument them heavily to capture data, and lock in your governance policies before you scale.
It is a delicate balance, but it is the only way to build enterprise AI that actually survives contact with the real world.
I want to leave you with a final thought, something to ponder as you look at your own teams and workflows this week. Because of these new tools, we are now demanding that our AI agents provide machine-readable provenance, perfectly recorded decision traces, and exactly calibrated confidence statements in order to earn our trust.
We expect them to show their work flawlessly every single time.
So how long will it be before we start expecting our human colleagues to provide that exact same level of data lineage and documented confidence for their own daily decisions?
It completely changes the standard for everyone, human or machine.
It's something to think about. Thank you for tuning in to this executive briefing of OpenClaw Daily. We will catch you next time.